Four more vehicles had pulled up over the next hour. Reese knew most of them, all former operators now working for the paramilitary side of U.S. intelligence. They now stood guard around the house, sentinels of the Republic, allowing Logan to tend to Reese and Katie's wounds. While Logan examined the gash on Reese's head, a GB contractor opened the door for Vic Rodriguez. Vic crossed through the foyer and extended his hand to Katie, the spymaster outwardly suppressing the shock of seeing Katie and Reese covered in dirt, sweat, and blood.
"Ms. Baranek, so good to see you again. I wish it were under better circumstances. How do you feel?"
Vic was addressing Katie but looked to Logan, who nodded reassuringly.
"I think I need more wine," Katie replied.
Vic chuckled.
"How is he?"
Vic asked Logan, knowing he would never get the truth out of the frogman.
"He's going to need some stitches in his head, and he's certainly got a concussion. Other than that, he just needs a shower and possibly a shave and a haircut,"
the Air Force medic jested.
"Fine, Vic,"
Reese winced as Logan parted his hair, inspecting the cut matted with dried blood.
"You look great,"
Vic deadpanned.
"Let's talk. Katie, will you excuse us?"
"Of course. I'm going to get cleaned up," she said.
Ever the gentleman, Vic offered his hand and assisted the journalist to her feet. Vic nodded to Logan and motioned for Reese to follow him to the kitchen.
"What the fuck is going on, Reese?"
Reese moved around the counter while Vic took a seat on a bar stool. He opened a drawer and removed a clean dish towel, which he ran under warm water, before applying it to his face to remove some of the blood.
"Is this room wired?" Reese asked.
"It is, but it's not recording."
"You sure?"
"I'm sure."
Reese ran the now bloody towel under the water again, watching the rose-colored water disappear down the drain.
"You want a drink? After I read you in on this, you are going to need it."
Chapter 42. When Reese finished, Vic closed his eyes and rubbed the bridge of his nose.
"The President of the United States ordered assassinations on U.S. soil. Jesus Christ."
"And the two dead guys are still in the van?"
Vic asked.
"They are. I went through their pockets, no wallets or cell phones, but it was just a cursory search on the side of the road. You might have better luck with a forensic team."
"I'll coordinate it."
"And if you don't mind, I have an AR in a storage drawer in the back of my truck, and my secure phone is in my pack, which was in the back seat. There are a few other things in there I probably shouldn't have had in D.C.
Vic nodded.
"I'll take care of it."
Reese paused.
"You're wondering why I didn't try to take one of those last two on the road alive, aren't you?"
Vic studied his newest recruit.
"It sounds like you were wondering that yourself, Reese."
Reese dropped the bloody towel in the sink.
"I saw the killers who took Lauren and Lucy from me in each of the men who came after us tonight. I couldn't let that happen again, Vic. I've put Katie in danger too many times. She almost died out there. She killed a man. She's acting tough, but as you know, the post-traumatic stress from events like tonight can manifest years afterward."
Vic nodded knowingly.
"I should have taken one. I could have."
"You don't know that, Reese. You made a tactical battlefield decision to eliminate the threat. Simple as that."
Both men knew it was not as simple as that.
"Regardless, it's done," Reese said. "No bringing them back. Question remains, who were they, who sent them, and why? I was worried about a faction of the Bratva tracking me down, maybe even Russian SVR. This crew was clearly speaking Farsi."
"Could it have something to do with anything you did in the teams?"
Vic asked.
"I guess it's possible, but you know how that works. You were banging targets every night, grabbing people and bringing them back to the FOB for interrogation. A lot of guys did that."
"Not a lot of guys then got caught up in the capstone experiment and were labeled a domestic terrorist by the U.S. government, only to have their picture splashed across cable news and social media outlets for months."
"There is that," Reese agreed.
If they knew about this safe house, they would have hit you here. They could have come in by water or the road or both. Too many variables to do a VI en route from D.C. to Annapolis, Vic said, using the abbreviation for vehicle interdiction. Rhys looked at the stairs that Katie had just walked up, and then back to Vic. As if reading his mind, Vic said, "Unless they were after Katie."
"It's feasible." "I don't know. Things are not adding up. I go after a network that helped facilitate 9/11. One of the targets in Chicago has a heart attack as I'm surveilling. I take one out in Atlanta and then get told to stand down by the president as this airborne hemorrhagic virus paralyzes the country. I come back to Northern Virginia to recalibrate and suddenly get targeted by 9 guys speaking Farsi? If what I was doing was agency-sanctioned, I'd say we have a mole in our midst, but this was not agency-sanctioned. This was me and the president."
"For the moment, I'm going to set aside the debate over legalities and chain of command and usurpation of authorities and the myriad laws you broke. Don't worry. We will revisit those later. Right now, I'm more concerned about foreign hit teams on U.S. soil targeting you and possibly others from Ground Branch. I have a cleanup crew coordinating with local law enforcement on scene. If any of these hitters are in the system of any Western Intelligence Service, we will know in a few hours."
"Am I interrupting anything, gentlemen?"
Katie asked, hitting the base of the staircase and walking toward the kitchen. She had cleaned up as best as she could. The blood that had dried on the right side of her face was gone, and she was in fresh clothes.
"Not at all, Ms. Baranek. Please join us," Vic said, standing and pulling out the counter chair.
"Please call me Katie, Mr. Rodriguez."
"Vic, please."
"Vic," Katie said. "Since we are forbidden from drinking the nectar of the gods for another night, can I get anyone some decaffeinated tea?"
"Let me," Rhys said.
"You will probably ruin it with cream and honey," Katie said with a smile. "I've got it. Vic?"
"No, thank you. I need to coordinate with the cleanup crew and see if we can get some answers on who these guys were."
"You might want to wait. I called my friend Haley Garrett at the CDC to let her know I was alive. She was planning to stop by tonight to help me with a story. She's on her way over now. I tried to discourage her, but she does not dissuade easily. She also has some information she wasn't comfortable sharing on the phone."
"What do you mean?"
Vic asked.
"I don't have specifics, but she doesn't think this virus originated in Angola. She thinks it's a bioweapon."
Chapter 43. Haley Garrett arrived 30 minutes later. Even though Katie had warned her about the additional security, she looked a little perturbed by the armed men in the driveway. The two old friends shared a warm hug.
"Katie, oh my God, are you okay?"
Haley asked, shooting daggers at Rhys.
"Yes, I'm fine. Just some scratches. Haley, you remember James, and this is Victor Rodriguez."
The two men shook hands with Haley, who studied them both the way a witness would analyze perps in a lineup from behind a two-way mirror.
"It's okay, Haley. Like I explained on the phone, these are two of the good guys."
Haley continued to take stock of the CIA operatives. She was dressed in running shoes, jeans, and a UC Davis sweatshirt. Her black hair was tied back, and retro vintage Ray-Ban prescription eyeglasses were perched precariously atop her head. She had the stern look of someone who could win any argument simply by wearing down and outlasting her opposition.
"I think we should sit down for this," she said, making her decision.
They moved to the spacious dining room and sat around the far end of a long rectangular table. Rhys looked up and noted that the ceiling was adorned with hand-painted roses.
Sub rosa.
Appropriate, Rhys thought.
"Mr. Rodriguez, what exactly do you do for the government?"
Haley asked.
"I work for the State Department."
"Ah, of course,"
she said. Everyone in Washington knew that State Department was a euphemism for the Central Intelligence Agency.
"Well, in that case, you just might be the perfect person."
"Perfect person for what?"
Vic asked. Haley looked at Katie, Rhys, and then back to Vic.
This virus is not airborne in the way we've become conditioned to understand the term, and I doubt it originated in Angola. I also suspect it is connected to the attack on Katie and James tonight.
I'm sorry, Ms. Garrett, I'm not following.
Neither are my bosses at the CDC. Hysteria has gripped not just the populace, but also the scientific community. My job is to follow clues, much like a detective. So, we have a suspected index case in Angola. Almost 500 people die, but the virus burns itself out like we've seen in the past. So far, nothing unusual. Only this time, a carrier boards a plane at Quatro de Fevereiro International Airport and brings the virus to the United States. It's happened before with the virus burning out on U.S. soil, but something is different about this. The virus has mutated. It has evolved. It's a new strain. How do we know? Because as of tonight, close to 3,000 people have died in Colorado and Texas. People who in no way could have had blood-to-blood contact. We know the Angola flight landed in Johannesburg, and then from there flights departed to JFK and Atlanta, with follow-on flights around the nation to include airports in Dallas and Denver. Therefore, it's airborne. Our worst nightmare, right?
That is my understanding, Vic said.
Then why do we not have cases in Johannesburg? Why no cases in Europe or the Middle East? In South Africa, passengers from Angola transferred to flights going to Dubai, UAE, Frankfurt, London, and Barcelona, but we only have cases in Dallas and Denver?
Maybe the carrier was not yet contagious until they got to Dallas or Denver, Reese offered.
I admit that is a possibility, but I submit that it is much more likely to be in either one specific location or to have spread to multiple areas around the world. Isolated to two cities is peculiar.
We see that in Africa, don't we? Vic asked. Isolated to a single village?
Yes, but typically villagers aren't traveling, which helps contain the spread, the doctor countered.
I read that the CDC officially identified it as a new strain of Ebola, Reese said.
That's true, Haley said. It looks like a new mutation of Ebola under a microscope.
A new strain that's airborne, Vic said, confirming the official account.
Yes, but airborne does not mean that it's being spread via respiratory means, she said.
Vic leaned back in his chair and crossed his arms.
Please elaborate, Vic said.
Okay, let me break it down for those of you with Y chromosomes. It's possible for something to be airborne, but not necessarily spread via respiratory pathways. Think of it in terms of getting sprayed with perfume by one of those annoying salespeople at a mall. We are all old enough to remember malls, right? Well, you smelled the perfume, sometimes even tasted it, but you didn't cough the perfume onto someone else an hour or even days later. Are you saying someone wants us to think this virus is spread naturally from human to human, but it was really intentionally released to infect people? Katie asked.
A bioweapon, Reese stated.
Haley looked at Reese.
That is my theory. It's only airborne in that it is spread by contact with direct aerosol droplets released by a controlled pressure device through a mist or a cloud of droplets. After that, it can only be spread as any standard hemorrhagic virus with direct blood to mucous membrane contact. It's actually difficult to spread with limited precautions.
That's what makes it an effective bioweapon, Reese offered. If you release a virus with that kind of death rate, it does you no good if it then spreads back and infects the country that released it.
That's right. Most importantly, it is incapable of human aerosolization like COVID-19. It's the perfect bioweapon. It strikes with incredible efficiency, but its genius is that it doesn't continue to spread past those initially infected.
That would defeat its purpose, Reese said, thinking aloud. So how do we kill it?
You don't kill it. It has infected everyone it's going to infect.
Unless someone is still out there releasing it manually.
Correct.
So to stop it, we find whoever is releasing it and we stop them, Reese stated. It wasn't a question.
Yes,
Haley said slowly. She had never heard the word stop used in a way that so naturally implied kill.
Can you prove it?
Vic asks.
No. It's just a theory. To prove it, we would need to first know what type of virus we are dealing with, and by that I mean what specific virus we are looking at. Right now, we are working off data that suggests it is a new strain of Ebola because that is what it most closely resembles under electron magnification, and because it matches a sample from a recent outbreak in Angola. If it is, in fact, an engineered bioweapon that is not in our system, we would have nothing with which to compare it. Some of these viruses were weaponized going back to World War II. Bioweapon research from Germany and Japan was absorbed by the Soviet Union and the United States, who then built on that research to develop their own programs, all highly classified. After we knew the type of virus, we'd then need a sample of the original bioweapon to compare to a sample from Colorado or Texas.
And what does the CDC think of this hypothesis?
Vic asked.
So far, it has fallen on deaf ears. We started with the premise that this outbreak originated in Angola because the mutated strain from samples in Richardson and Aurora matched the sample taken from Angola to a T. After it was identified, we, the scientific community as a whole, set out to develop an inoculation the way we did with COVID-19.
You mean making a vaccine from one of the infected patients? Reese asked.
That is by and large a Hollywood myth. You just can't pull antibodies off the shelf and inoculate 300 million people. It doesn't work that way. The point is, all our efforts went into developing a vaccine. No one stopped to ask why the spread rate is deviating from every other contagious disease ever documented.
Seeing that those around the table were not grasping the concept, she continued.
Usually the spread rate is inverse to the mortality rate.
That does not sound good. What exactly does it mean?
Reese asked.
The faster pathogens spread, the slower they kill. That preserves the host and gives the virus a chance to spread, to survive. By contrast, this virus may have adapted to spread via respiratory droplets. Someone can pass it through a cough rather than direct blood-to-blood contact, as with your garden variety hemorrhagic virus. It's hard to infect another human when a disease is transmitted through blood. But if this virus maintains its mortality rate of 85% to 90% in its current mutation, then it is no longer a flu or H1N1 outbreak with a 0.01% mortality rate, or even COVID with a 0.1% or 0.2% mortality rate. If this outbreak continues on its current path and escapes the isolation measures in Richardson and Aurora, we are talking 280 million people dead, and that does not take into account international ramifications.
The sixth wave?
Katie whispered.
The sixth wave?
Reese asked.
Holocene extinction,
Haley explained.
Planetary extinction of the human race. Earth has witnessed five previous mass extinctions. The last one was approximately 66 million years ago. Many scientists believe we are due for another.
Dr. Garrett, you do not seem as distressed about this possibility as one would expect,
Vic noted.
That's because this is not that event, but we are being manipulated to believe it is for a reason that I don't yet understand.
Explain, Vic pressed.
Are any of you familiar with mathematically modeling R0?
The what?
Reese asked.
R0, reproduction number. You may have heard it called R0. It's a mathematical term used to describe the intensity of an infectious disease and therefore indicate its rate of transmission. Think of it as a spread rate. 1-to-1 transmission is a 1. If it rises higher than 1-to-1, the result is what we call a logarithmic growth at uncontrolled speed. Below 1-to-1, it burns itself out.
To the blank stares of her audience, Haley continued.
A situation where, on average, each infected person spread the illness to one other single person would establish an R0 of 1.
You lost me,
Reese admitted.
Simply put, Haley said, if the R0 is over 1, it's on a logarithmic escalation. That number does not change by the day. Rather, it takes weeks for curves to be established.
You are saying that Texas and Colorado deviate from the established model, Reese said.
processing the data and wrapping his head around the implications. That's right. The rate of spread in Richardson, thousands of patients all at once, would put the rate off the map. The R-naught would be 20, 30, or possibly higher, but then it jumped to another location with a smaller subset. That is too high a variance within the virus. They do not mutate or adapt that quickly.
Meaning? Reese asked.
Meaning that the logarithmic growth rate would indicate the entire country should be infected by now, but we are not. Somebody, possibly a group of people, is releasing it in aerosolized doses trying to mimic a respiratory spread contagion.
The repercussions of Haley's theory settled over the table. Vic broke the silence first.